Well, that is our signal. Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Coffee with Decoder, the first episode of 2018, January the 8th, and this is episode number 28. We are delighted to have you with us this morning and eager to get into a bunch of questions with Paula Digby and her team. Hi, Paula.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone.
I'm going to just jump right into this first one that we kind of teased about on the pre-call. This one's from Tiffany in Arizona, and she is in an inpatient rehab. She has a question regarding the readmission class on the IRFPI and sequela codes. So she says in the IRFPI training manual, it says to use sequela of cerebrovascular disease only when an inpatient program has been completed for the same stroke prior to the current admission. If a patient comes to inpatient rehab for a stroke, discharges to acute care for a complication, and then returns to rehab for the same stroke 5 days later, is this a readmission and I would use a sequela code for the etiode? She says, I'm hung up on the word completed. The rehab stay was not completed because the patient was discharged urgently to the medical floor, but the patient has been on rehab for this diagnosis before. So what do you say?
Yeah, thank you, Tiffany, for your question. And actually, Tiffany and I went back and forth communicating on this, and so she said, yeah, go ahead, put this one on Coffee with Decoder because I do get this question from time to time, so I wanted to make sure and bring it to your attention. So I said to Tiffany, you know, you're correct to be hung up on the word completed. The rehab was not completed for that stroke. So coming back, the patient is then going to complete their rehab for that acute stroke. So even though there was an interrupted stay, if you will, I mean, it was not a true interrupted stay in which it was less than 3 midnights. The patient was out for 5 days. But when they come back, you're still completing that rehab for the stroke. You're not performing the rehab for another issue. So with that situation, the etiologic would be reported as the acute stroke for this admission because the initial rehab encounter was not completed for the stroke. If you have a situation where the rehab is completed and then the patient maybe has an exacerbation in their hemiplegia but does not have a new stroke, that's when I'm just using hemiplegia as an example, that's when you would report the sequela as the etiologic.
Thank you. We do have to hang on every word, don't we?
Yeah, awesome. We really do.
Okay, so let's move on over to Texas, where Taylor has a question. I think this is inpatient rehab. You may have to help me with this. She says, I have a patient who was admitted for a traumatic subarachnoid hemorrhage on the 18th of September and discharged on the 3rd of October. His assigned impairment group was traumatic brain injury, with his etiologic diagnosis being subarachnoid hemorrhage. I was told by our vendor help desk that any patient who was discharged on or after October 1, 2017 with this diagnosis would be considered a qualifying admission. However, this chart is still showing as not qualifying. Do you know if there's other codes I might be able to use to qualify the patient? He also has Parkinson's as a comorbid, which I would expect to make him qualified, although I was told this specific etiologic diagnosis would override.
Yes, that is correct, Taylor. The code that I'm expecting you would have reported was S06.6X0A. And Pam, you're correct. This is an inpatient rehab facility question. That would have been listed as your etiologic for the subarachnoid hemorrhage. So if this was reported and the discharge was 10-1 or after, it is listed in the CMS files as compliant and would cause the case to meet 60% compliance. So your help desk was correct. And Parkinson's is also a qualifier, but as stated by your vendor help desk, the IGC and the etiologic would be the first data element considered for qualification. If your software does not recognize it as compliant, you should really contact them directly and talk about a different question. You know, the CMS files show that this code is compliant, but as I'm working and putting the patient information in, the patient is coming back non-compliant, and then they would look at the software logic. Now, you may recall that prior to October 1st, 17, and I think this question comes because the patient was admitted before the new year began with the new ICD-10 codes and the new rule, which starts October 1st. So prior to October 1st, there were inconsistencies in reporting this specific diagnosis code, whereas when it was reported as an etiologic diagnosis, it was stated as non-qualifying, versus when it was reported as a comorbidity, it was stated as qualifying in the final rule for the previous year. And if it was reported with a seventh character of S for sequela, it caused compliance. So we believe that this was an oversight and was corrected in the current year's final rule. So SO6.6X0A was not included previously, but in 2018, as of October 1st, it would be included. Now, I just want to bring your attention back to at the pre-call information, there was a coupon code that was stated for you guys to go out on the Facebook page or go out on LinkedIn, I think, and get that coupon code. And the EarthPI resource manual is very clear, and it defines which impairment groups and which diagnosis codes cause those cases to qualify. So it's a very handy, handy tool. It's, I think, over 700 pages now, because we've listed every single ICD-10 code that is listed in the EarthPI manual and then some. So just wanted to make you aware that that resource would have helped you with the answer really quick.
Thank you, Paula. Yes, that was definitely a labor of love, as you're fond of saying. And I have, even though I'm not a coder and don't work in your area, I'm only in technology, it's been amazing to watch that book come together and answer all the questions. So I now have an anonymous question, and you're certainly welcome to send in anonymous questions if that feels more comfortable for you. However, anonymous can't win a mug, okay? So that's just how it is. So this question, can you report conditions documented by consultants and not by the attending or rehab physician?
Okay, so this is a really good question, not only for the IRF setting, but also for the acute inpatient hospital setting. I've gotten this question from both systems, if you will. Yes, so the question, all diagnoses that are validated by physician statement as existing, treated, extending the length of stay, or utilizing a resource are reported. If a consultant states a diagnosis that the attending did not, it may be reported. Or if a consultant gets more specific than the attending, the greater specificity may be reported. However, if the consultant and the attending both document conflicting information, the attending is the sheriff and should be queried for clarification. So the logic behind this is that the attending is the one that is responsible for the overall care of the patient. And if the consultant says something that is in disagreement with the attending physician, then of course you've got to say, okay, the one who is in charge of that patient, in charge of the overall care, what's going on? And then that physician would, you know, if there was a question, go back to the consultant and have some discussion. Now, I did want to bring your attention to the fact that there are specific guidelines, however, when the pathologist is, you know, if you'd say that the pathology report gives a more detailed answer. So when you look in coding clinic, it really clearly states that even though the pathologist is a physician, the attending must state the relevance and validation of the findings for them to be reported. According to coding clinic, the pathologist is not directly responsible for the treatment of the patient. So, and this includes those situations where the attending states a general diagnosis and the pathologist states, you know, gives greater detail, because we really need that attending physician to validate that that information is correct and that that is what he or she is going on to treat the patient.
Thank you, thank you. And I'm going to state the obvious here. You were talking about a consultant and the physician, and so not that anybody on this call would be confused, but just in case there's someone dialing into the replay who doesn't, we're talking about a consulting physician. We're not
Correct.
Talking about a regular consultant.
Yes, a consulting physician and an attending physician, yes.
Okay. Well, I mean, I assumed it would be obvious to everyone else, but we're in the business of helping you state the obvious so that it's
right.
clear. Okay,
right.
Well, let me pop in. I think we're not quite done, so let me pop in another anonymous question that popped in this week. It's from CPT. Can you please describe the difference in using the new modifier 96 versus 97?
Okay, yeah, this answer was actually in our CPT updates webinar that we presented back in December and then replayed again in January. And we explained that according to the American Occupational Therapy Association, they stated starting January 1st, 2017, there were federal regulations that required individual and small group market plans to have separate visit limits for habilitative and rehabilitative services. An insurance company petitioned CMS to create an SC modifier in 2014 to distinguish between habilitative and rehabilitative, but now insurers are starting to use it to track and enforce separate visit limit requirements. So let me give you a description. 96, habilitative services. Those services keep a person or help a person to keep, learn, or improve skills and functioning for daily living. In contrast to that, rehabilitative services help a person keep, get back, or improve skills and functioning for daily living that have been lost or impaired because a person was sick, hurt, or disabled. So one is about helping them gain new skills, and one is about helping them regain the skills that they lost. So habilitative and rehabilitative services can involve the same services. They can be provided in the same setting to address the same functional deficits and achieve the same outcome. The difference is whether they involve learning something new or relearning something that's been lost or impaired. So remember, if we redo something, that's the way to remember. Rehabilitative is services that we're relearning, and habilitative is something that we're learning. So that was a good question regarding those new modifiers in CPT.
Yes, it was. Thank you. Okay, so now it's time for the mugging. I have put the names of the two people who did ask non-anonymous questions. I've been stirring them up in this little container on my desk, and so now we're going to have a winner. So, drum roll, please. Today's winner is Taylor in Texas. So, Taylor, congratulations. We'll be reaching out to you to find out where to send your mug and looking for your mugshot so that you can qualify as an insider. We appreciate all of you joining us today. Send in your questions, Coffee with the Coder, and ask to be on our texting list. Episode 29 will begin at 10:10 a.m. on January the 22nd, so 2 weeks from today. Thanks for being a part of Coffee with the Coder and for telling all your friends.